Welcome on behalf of Torah Motion, Parsha Lech Lecha. I apologize. I don't know if apology is the right word, but I wasn't initially scheduled to give the shiur, and Shoshana Schechter, who was, is going to be giving the shiur on Parsha Dvarim, and here we are tonight. So let's learn, and hopefully you'll enjoy. Okay. All right. Parsha Lech Lecha. So Parsha Lech Lecha, of course, marks perhaps the major pivot in the Torah. The first 11 chapters in the Torah, which takes up the vast majority of the time of the Torah. In other words, the first 1948 years, I'm sure people know here, it's very cute. I don't know if it's relevant at all, but Abraham was born in the year 1948, of course, a different calendar than our calendar. But if you add up the years from Adam HaRishon, so the first, let's say, 1948 years, that's the first 11 chapters of the Torah. And then the rest of the chapters, that's for 20 generations. The rest of the Torah, six generations from Avraham until Moshe. And that's 500 years, pretty much exactly, or 540 years, because it's 400 years they were in Egypt, 100 years from the birth of Abraham, 500 years. So the rest of the Torah, they left Egypt in 2448, if you add up the years, although that's not 100% explicit in the Torah. That I cannot prove 100%. That Abraham was born in 1948 is just grade three math. That they spent 400 years in Egypt is not necessarily so clear. We know, we say at Haggadah, they were 210 years in Egypt, and Torah says they were 430 years in Egypt. That's not our subject. But the point being, obviously, even though it's only six generations from Lech Lecha on, that's, of course, the bulk of the Torah. And the question is, of course, what's the relationship between the first 11 chapters and chapter 12? So we have spoken in the past, basically, that Avram is really a reaction to what happened. In other words, God's initial plan was, at least according to this line of reasoning, God's initial plan was not necessarily to have a Jewish people. God spoke to all of humanity. God created Adam, B'Tselem Elohim, created God in his image, and all of mankind was going to be created in his image, and he put mankind in Gan Eden, and it didn't work so well. And then it worked really, really poorly, so poorly that God was upset he made the world. That's a major theological issue, not for now. What does that mean? God was upset he created the world. He was sorry. He didn't know. He did know. He knew. Eino doma shmia l'ri'ah. In other words, you can know something, but when you see it, it's worse. I don't know. Do those applications apply to God? But whatever that means is God regretted that he had created the world, and he was going to, and so he started again. He would have destroyed the world if not for Noah. And Noah saved the world. Noah was an Ish Tzadik Tamim B'Dorotav, and all the rabbis who like to put down Noah, the rabbis in the Midrash, no, he wasn't so great. I don't know. He was pretty great. That's, again, another discussion. But anybody who the Torah says is Noah was an Ish Tzadik Tamim, you know, he's a pretty good guy. But anyways, Noah saves the world, but that doesn't work so well either. And then we come to Avraham. And really, Avraham, in other words, God said, I'm not going to work with all of humanity. That's not going to work. I'm going to work with one family. And that family is going to be an Avhamon Goyim. He's going to be the father of many nations. He's going to teach people. He's going to teach people. But the first 11 chapters set the stage for chapter 12. You can't really understand Avraham Avinu if you don't understand the first 11 chapters. The Rambam in The Laws of Idolatry, so he traces kind of human history, the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And he discusses God created Adam, and Adam, of course, understood God, and he worshiped God. And then they started a few generations later worshiping the stars, because God had created the stars, not as idolatry. As mentioned, idolatry was a big mistake. It wasn't out of evil. It wasn't an evil thing. They made a mistake. They thought, I can worship God through the stars and the moons that God created. And then eventually they lost the connection. And the Rambam described the whole history until Avraham Avinu came. It is very interesting. We meet Avraham Avinu pretty much, except for a few verses that we will get to. We meet Avraham Avinu, he's 75 years old. That's when God tells him to go to the land of Canaan, or he doesn't even tell him to go to the land of Canaan. He tells him to go somewhere, to just go take a hike, and he doesn't even know where he's going, to the land that I'll show you. By the way, the Torah never tells us until much later that, in other words, God showed him. In other words, he's walking around, And then God says, oh, this is the land I'm going to give you. He had no idea where he's going. That's also quite fascinating. But so we know very little about Avram. The Torah tells us kimat nothing. So I just want to say, I want to sort of give an overview of who Avram was, just first initially, and then taking a look at some of the points, just an overview of the Parsha. So the first thing, we meet, of course, Avraham, or Avram, if you want to be precise, we meet him at the end of Parsha Noach, where the Torah tells us that Terach, who's the ninth generation from Noach, Terach had three children. Everybody else had one child, or everybody else's one child name. You know, in every generation, they name one child. We basically know pretty much nothing about these children. The children between, we know nothing. We know they were born and they died. But Terach has three kids. And what do we know about these kids? So we know that Avram took a wife. He married Sarai. Now, that's very nice. So did lots of other people get married. But that's already, you know, it's one of the few women who's ever mentioned. So that already tells you something about Avram. This is not going to be a story of just about a man. It's going to be a story about a man and a wife, unlike Noach. Noach is a story. We don't know who Noach's wife is. Her name is never mentioned. We don't know who the children, the wives of Shem, Ham, and Yafet are. It's pretty amazing. There are eight people in the ark, right? As the Torah says, eight people in the ark, and we don't know half of their names. That's not because the Torah ran out of space. That's because it's indicative of the type of a society it was. So the first thing we know about is he got married. And then the Torah introduces us to Sarah. I always say it's just like hitting below the belt. The Torah says, who is Sarah? So what does the Torah tell us about Sarah? So Sarah tells us, Vati Sarah Akara. You want to know who Sarah was? Sarah was barren. Sarah didn't have meet Sarah. She doesn't have children. Ain la vlad, which of course is a totally unnecessary repetition. Once the Torah tells us that he Sarah akara ain la vlad, we know she doesn't have any children. It's like to hit them while you're down. The Torah wants to emphasize the barrenness of Sarai. It's like it's painful. Like, can you imagine today introducing somebody and talking about their infertility and they want to, here's this person, she's infertile, she can't have children. It's such a punch in the gutter. So what's the Torah doing here? So that's the Torah, of course. What's all of society up until that point? So 25% of the first 11 chapters of the Torah is taken up by what we would call boring, you know, genealogies. The 10 generations from Adam to Noah and besides, or the 7 generations after Cain, you know, that dilemma that we have right before that, and the 10 generations, no, just list of names, boring names. It's a common theme in the Bereishit. We have that by Esav, but just listing of names. But the first, it's an interesting question why the Torah does that. But you see that the Torah, the role of woman is basically to have children. That was, I mean, the Torah is coming to change that. That's why all the imahot are barren. But the purpose of woman has mankind view woman is to be basically a baby factory. Their names are unimportant. They're not mentioned, and that's all they do. So if Sarah can't have children, that means she's really out of it. She can't be somebody, you know, special. This is a way of saying that Sarah is totally different from everybody else. That was the definition of what a woman is. Now, if that's the case, so, you know, who does God appear? So that's all we know. They got married, and we know that one of his brothers died. We don't know why he died. The Torah doesn't tell us anything about the early life of Avram. We'll have to come back to that. All the Midrashim we learned in kindergarten and grade 3, none of them appear in the Chumash. And the question is, are any of them true? We'll hopefully come back to that in a little bit. But then, so that's all we know. We know that Terach had three children, but we know one other important idea, that Terach wanted to make Aliyah. A very strange verse. That Terach, it's the last parsha, the last two psukim in Parsha Noach. That what does it say? Vayikach Terach et Avram beno bet Lot ben Haran ben beno, and Terach took his children and his grandson Lot, and they started Vayetzu miurkas dimalachet Arzak Knan Vayevoat Haran. They left to go to Knan. We don't know why. God didn't speak to them, and they dwelt there. And then Terach died. Terach died, and then Avram appeared. God appears to Avram. We'll see if that's not exactly true, but that's how the Torah presents it. What does God tell Avram? Anybody want to tell me? It's what does God tell Avram to do? It's an easy question. I just want to make sure people are listening. Lech lecha me'artzecha. And who's he supposed to go with? Who's he supposed to go with?
It doesn't say.
It doesn't say. So who would you think he's supposed to go with? Who's Avram going to take with him on his journey to this unknown land?
His wife.
Yes. What do you think? He should or shouldn't take his wife? Tell me why a normal person wouldn't take their wife, or I don't know, normal, but maybe that's not the right phrase. Tell me a good reason why Avram shouldn't take his wife.
It might be in danger.
Sorry?
Because she could have.
She doesn't know where he's going.
She doesn't. Okay, she might be in danger. We'll get to that with Egypt. Yeah. What else was somebody saying? I'm sorry.
She couldn't have any children.
Ah, exactly. She couldn't have any children. Why is Avraham going to this land that God is telling him?
To start a new whatever.
To start a new nation. So what's the first requirement that Avraham needs?
A wife who can have kids.
And a wife who can have kids. And you know, you travel with it's going to schlep out the trip an extra year or two. So God doesn't tell Avraham and Sarah. You don't have to agree with how
we're. He said it's Chalegoy Gadol.
Right, Chalegoy Gadol is not going to be with Sarah. The Torah has emphasized twice, but he Sarah Akara Ein Lavlat, and that's all we know about Sarah. The only thing we know about her is she can't have kids, and the only thing we know about everybody else in the Chumash, like 25% of the Chumash in two parsha, this one had this kid and this kid, and they Bayodu Banimu Banot, they had many, 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 many kids. That's the Torah. Kids, 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 kids. Sarah can't have kids. God says, you know, leave your home. You're going to a new country. You'll get a new wife when you go there. But it says, Vayelech Avram, Asher Diber, Vayikach Avram, et Sarah Ishto, and Avram took his wife. Doesn't say that Sarah went with Avram. Avram, God is talking to Abraham to go. And so Abraham takes Sarah. So that's just, of course, this is the difference between the Jewish conception of marriage and the sort of the pre-Abrahamic conception of marriage. That's exactly what the Torah is telling us.
He took also Lot.
Yeah, I'm coming there. He also took Lot. Right. It's also took Lot. Just like the Akedah is a way of the Torah to tell us that the notion of human sacrifice, which was common in the ancient world, is unacceptable. That's the Akedah is a very hard parsha, but one of the messages, clearly, I think, one of the main messages of the Akedah is the anti-Akedah story. In other words, the purpose of the Akedah is to take Avram to the brink of killing his son and then saying, you can't kill him. Val taslo me'uma. Not only can't you kill him, Rashi quotes a funny medrash, like, al tishlach etcha al hanar, don't hurt him. Al taslo me'uma, don't do anything. So Rashi, he wanted to draw a little blood. Okay, I won't kill him, but God, let me sacrifice him a little. Now, I want to sacrifice part of Yitzchak to you. Of course, I won't kill him. Just let me draw some blood, put it on the altar. Like, what's going on here? But clearly, in other words, in the ancient world, if you showed love, there is, we all know there's a warp logic, but there is a logic to sacrificing. For us, it's God forbid. It's horrendous. It's terrible. But if you love God, you offer God your most beloved thing. So you offer God your child. That's what it means. So the Torah is telling us that's terrible. But I there's no reason to necessarily think it's terrible. But Avraham wanted, I won't kill him, but at least let me draw a little blood. And the message of the Torah is you can never hurt anybody else in the in your closeness to God. So the same way the Akedah is really, like I like to say, the entire Torah is like an editorial comment on society. I don't know the entire Torah, but very often the Torah is commenting on societal norms. So the Torah is telling us sacrificing children in the pre-Abrahamic world made sense. And then people did that. People still, and we know that still happens, unfortunately.
No, but I heard one say that maybe he did not understand what God said.
Let's leave that for now. We can discuss that at the end. So the same way that Avram at the Akedah is to go against the norms of the world, Avram at the beginning of creation, at the beginning of the story, about how he treats his wife is also, it's in contradistinction to what everybody else does. So the first interesting thing we know about Avram, so he's already a little bit different. We know his wife's name, and the fact that she doesn't have any children means he still loves her. And we know, of course, it's only when Sarah said he should take Hagar, he took Hagar. He never thought of taking a second wife on his own. Whatever, that's God's problem, how to figure out how to make him a great nation if he can't have any kids. It's not Avram's problem. He's married. I mean, that's whatever. That's what he thought. So Avram is married. So that's the first thing we know. So he takes Sarah. So that already tells you there's something very special about Avram. The second thing, of course, he takes his nephew Lot with him. It's also very nice, but it also shows a certain kindness, his nephew with him. He probably knew who Lot was. I don't think Lot is one of the sort of, the Torah. I remember how when I had the pleasure of having Nechama Leibowitz for a year when I studied with her when I was, in Smitna in the Gross Kollel in Israel. So Nechama always used to tell us, I mean, we know this, but the Torah almost never passes judgment on people. Almost never. The Torah describes events. Were they right or wrong? That's up to you to decide. And that's why so often, as we'll see, we'll get there in a little bit in this week's Parsha, there are disagreements because the Torah is very ambiguous on purpose. And the Torah wants to have multiple interpretations for everybody. So the Torah doesn't tell us much about Lot. But I'll tell you one beautiful idea. I thought it's a beautiful idea. If you have a Chumash handy, just to show you when the difference with Lot and Avram. So it says when they there was famine in the land. So it says this is chapter 12, verse 10. Vayirab Aretz, there was famine. Vayirab Avram Mitzrayma Lagur Sham. So Avram goes to Egypt because there's a lot of food in Egypt. And then it says, what does it say? It says when they come back. Hold on. It says, if you look back, Avram Kaved Moad, Vayelech L'Masa'av. Okay, it says, hold on. I can't find the verse. Yeah, first chapter 13. Vayal Avram Yitzrayma, Huvi Ishto B'chol Asher Lo, V'lod Imo Hanegba. When they come back from Egypt, it's Sarah, his wife, their money, and Lot. Their money is placed, the Torah, when they go to Egypt, it's Avram, Sarah, and Lot and their possessions. When they come back, it's Avram, Sarah, their possessions, and Lot. Just a little, minor hint. You won't even notice it. It's the Torah is telling us that separating Avram and Lot, v'chol asher lo, all they had. And, of course, that comes up next. Why does Lot want to live in Sodom, etc.? So that's Lot. Lot, now, I understand that. Listen, everybody likes to make money. I mean, Avram also made a lot of money in Egypt. He came back a wealthy man. But anyways, Avram takes Lot. So that's also something very interesting about him. Okay, so Avram Avinu, and basically, as we sort of alluded to, Avram going to Eretz Canaan. The story of Abraham is bookended by two lech lechas, right? Lech lecha, me'artzecha, me'lodecha, me'beit avicha. And then in chapter 22, God says, take your son who you love, your dear son, Yitzchak, ve'lech lecha. It's the same language. And of course, that's on purpose. Lech lecha. The first lech lecha is departing his past. Abraham has to cut off his past. And then the second lech lecha is you have to cut off his future. That's basically, in other words, lech lecha me'artzecha. It's very hard. He has to leave everybody behind, cutting off your past. And then the akedah, of course, is to cut off his future. Now, the akedah, of course, is much harder. To sacrifice his own son, obviously, that's much more difficult on that level. But conceptually, both are equally different. To be forced to cut yourself off from your past is equally difficult, is an extremely difficult thing. And that's also the major test. Now, what's with Terach? Why did Terach go to Israel? Anybody? I'm curious what you have to say because I'm looking for a good answer. Why the Torah tells us Terach went to Israel, and the Torah tells us Terach died in Haran. So I'm sure many of you know the famous Rashi, and you just add up the years. Terach was alive for many years when Avram was there. But that's a common Torah technique. In other words, Yitzchak was alive when Yosef was sold to Egypt. He's alive for a long time. And if you add up the years, it's just that, but the Torah always presents it like, you know, they end the story of Terach and then they move the story to Avram. But Avram leaves his old father. He leaves his father because God told him he has to leave his father, and he comes to the land of Canaan. Okay, so let's just quickly, before we discuss what happens when he gets there, let's just take a look at a few other things that Avraham Avinu has done. So what we know about him so far is he has a totally different relationship with his wife than anybody else, even Noah. Even Noah, we don't know his wife's name. And despite the fact that God told him, I'm going to make you a great nation, he insists, I'm going to take Sarah. Sarah's my wife. You're going to make me a great nation. You're going to make her a great nation too. She can't have kids. That's not my problem. So he takes her, and he has Rachmanis. He has mercy on his orphaned nephew. And he takes Lot with him also. Now, what else do we know about Avram? So just very quickly, these are obvious, but we sometimes don't pay attention. So first of all, Avram is an explorer. He's like many great people. You want to explore the Rav Soloveitchik, Adam 1. God created man with a desire to explore and expound. Vayelech Avram halok benaso hanegba. Like he wanders the land. He wants to get to know the land. He's a good businessman. When he goes down to Egypt, he comes back from Egypt, kaved ma'od, very heavy, b'mikneh, b'zahav. Avraham Avinu made a lot of money in Egypt. We don't know what he's doing, and we know the Avot, most, according to most commentators, were basically wealthy. You know, Yitzchak and Mea Sharim, they had a lot of money. Money's a good thing. It's what you do with it. So Avraham must have been...
Wasn't that a result that he got all that from?
So Paro gave it to him. So we have to come back and we have to discuss that incident. We'll come back to that. But the Torah doesn't say directly that's where he got his money. It just said he sent him away. It doesn't say he sent him with money. That's Elimelech. Elimelech later on sends away with money. But it says, here, what does it say in the Chumash? It doesn't say he got it. He treated him well. Okay. But that, right. Bavura, because of her, until he found out. But what he should have done is he should have taken away all the wealth when he kicked them out. But Avram manages to have wealth. So maybe he did take it away. Maybe he had a Swiss bank account or something. But we know that when Avram leaves, it's very interesting. Look, I don't want to spend too much time on that. But Avram leaves Egypt with a lot of money. It's very strange. Avram also doesn't answer Paro's question. Paro said, how could you lie to me? How could you tell me she's your sister? So when this happens in chapter 20 with Avimelech, so Avram gives three excuses. She is my sister, you know, she's my half-sister, and, you know, I was afraid. He gives all these three excuses. Here he doesn't say a word. Paro says, how can you do that to me? And Avram doesn't say a word. It just said, and maybe he doesn't say a word because Paro says, Vatai, neishtecha kakalek. Here's the way, get out of here. Or it's Paro's mad. But it's very interesting that happened. Like, get out of here and goodbye. There's no discussion between Paro and Avram. But okay, that's to think about why the Torah presents those stories slightly differently. So he's an explorer, he's a good businessman. He's, of course, a peacemaker. The Roeit son of Lot and Avram are having a dispute, and then Avram said, let's separate. He doesn't want to fight. He makes a peace treaty later on with Abimelech. Later on, there's some criticizing for that. In other words, internal peace among brothers, that's what he says to Lot, Achim, we're brothers, we cannot fight. And then he makes Avimelech, who of course isn't his brother, a peace treaty. On the other hand, he's a warrior. He's willing to go to war, he's willing to die, he's willing to fight to rescue Lot in a battle that he had no right winning. I mean, the odds were stacked against him, and he took 318 men to fight. So we see he's a peacemaker when peace can be made, but he's goes to war when he has to go. He negotiates. Ludi. He doesn't want any money from the spoils of the war, but Eshkol and Mamre, they have to get their things. Not fair. Where after the war is over, they make sign all the agreements. He negotiates, of course, a burial plot for Sarah. He's a great host. that's the beginning of course of next week's Parsha. He's a good lawyer. I mean, he may have lost the case with Storm, but that wasn't because he wasn't a good lawyer. And he argued vehemently, and that was arguing even to save them independently. In other words, he cared about the people of Storm. That's the Netziv in his famous introduction to Bereshit points out the greatness of the Avod is how they cared about everybody. That's what Sefer Bereshit is all about, how they cared about non-Jews and to make peace. Avram prayed for Storm and they're making peace treaties and they want to get along with people. And of course, that's the Achilles heel of the Jewish people, sort of the Derech Eretz Kadmal the Torah. That's what he calls it. Sefer HaYashar, the book of the straight, and the example, the primary example is Avram caring for Storm. And he says he hated the Storm. He hated their lifestyle. This is abhorrent to him. Avram stood for everything against. Okay, you stand for everything against, but you don't want them to suffer. Kind of like Yonah and Nineveh. That's the message. Yonah doesn't want to save the people of Nineveh. They stand for everything we don't stand for. God says, nonetheless, they're my creations. It's a very difficult concept for us, right? That we don't sing and dance when we're when the Egyptians are drowning in the Yamsum. So that's Avram. Avram Avinu cares for the people of Storm, even as they are wicked. That's a very difficult level for people to reach, but that's how the Netziv explains. That's the greatness of the Avot. And of course, he knows how to argue with God. At the same time, he knows how to accept God. That's one of the key questions is why does he argue for Storm and he doesn't say one word? When God says to sacrifice your son, why doesn't he argue with God? Anybody want to throw out an answer? Again, the Torah doesn't tell us. There's no answer. There's all conjecture, which is fine. Whatever answer works for us is a good answer. In other words, that's the whole point of the Torah. The Torah purposely leaves it unclear. Whatever message we can find, that's good. You know, in other words, why does Avram not argue with the Akedah, but he argues some? Does anybody want to throw out any ideas?
One was a direct mitzvah to him.
And yeah, so that's what some say. God said, I'm going to let Avram know, you know, Avram's going to be a great nation. He's going to be the founder of a great nation. You know, am I going to hide from Avram that what I'm going to do? Let me tell him I'm going to wipe out some. Whoa. God gives him like a heads up what he's planning.
An opening.
Right. It's an opening. Whereas by Yitzchak, it's Lech Lecha, just like it is to go to Eretz Canaan. Lech Lecha Me'eretz Lecha. So what they recommend, that could very possibly be. Although you can't argue with the direct command on God. I don't know. Did Moshe ever argue with the direct command from God? What do all the prophets do? Jonah said, with talking about Jonah, God says, go to Nineveh. They argue. I don't know. That could be. But I'm not so sure that you can't argue. You have to, at the end, you may have to give in, but that doesn't mean you can't argue along the process. That's one. Okay. Any other approaches anybody want to recommend? Why Avram is signed?
It's Esther. Is it possible that he's willing to argue for the sake of things like Maradayin, in a sense, and for other nations and other peoples? And
so you can say like... a lawyer who defends himself has a fool for a client, right? Everybody knows that one, right? It's very hard you can be the top lawyer. You got to get somebody else to argue for you. It's very hard to argue for your own family. That could be, although it's also the difficult answer in this context, but it is true. It's much easier to
argue.
I didn't even
mean that it would be hard to argue. I meant that maybe that's not where he's at. Maybe he's arguing when it's other people who are at risk, but because this was right. Himself and he felt it would be more selfish.
Right.
Maybe. It could also be that he didn't think it was so wrong. What we said at the beginning, if my point is correct, that in the world, we know it's true, that in the ancient world, child sacrifice was normal. And the point of the Akedah was to teach Avram it's not. And Avram wants to hurt, if I can use that word. He wants to draw blood from Yitzchak because that's the way to show his love of God. So when God told him to sacrifice, it may be hard, but he thought it's the right thing. It's the right thing. In other words, yes, of course, God, you gave me a son, but we know that in the world, the way we show our love to God is we give up our most precious being, our most precious possession, our children we give to God. Of course, the Torah is coming to teach us not to think like that, but Avram doesn't know that yet. At this point in the game, Avram's living in a society where that's the norm. So it could be he didn't argue to wipe out Sodom. Whoa, wiping out a whole city. That's not acceptable. That's not norm. That doesn't show love of God. Maybe that's why. Or anybody want to argue with me?
Rabbi, I have I was always under the impression that child sacrifice was not a way of showing our love to God. It was a way of can you hear me?
Can whoever says the thing unmute himself? Yeah, I can hear you. That go on, Karen.
That it was to pacify the gods.
To pacify the gods. So I don't know. I don't know enough about ancient cultural practices. To me, if I want to, like, the same way a Avodah Zarah, you can look at idolatry. All these fools, these idiots, they worship idols. That's not the way to look at idolatry. Idolatry was a sophisticated methodology to worship God. It wasn't this simplistic things. There was a philosophy behind it. So I don't know historically, but I would think the philosophy of offering your child as a sacrifice is not to appease the gods. There may be that you give an animal to appease God. I don't know, but it's more to demonstrate your absolute love of God, that you're willing to sacrifice your
fear.
Children. I'm sorry?
Or fear.
What do you mean? But in other words, he was afraid if he wouldn't listen to God, what would happen to him?
God did not, as I tried to say before, he did not understand. God did not tell him shchateu. He did not tell him akriveu. He said ha'aleu.
Ha'aleu, lola. Okay.
A spiritual la'alot, but not, he did
but
not.
But an olah means a burnt offering. But whatever the case is, I just want to point out my point when I sort of summarize that Avram, he argues with God, and sometimes he totally doesn't argue with God. He sometimes goes to war. He sometimes makes peace. Is basically Avram is like in Kohelet, eight lasot this and eight lasot that. In other words, Avram, the key about Avram is to know when to do what. But if you look through Avram, he's really the man of all seasons. He, whatever is needed at that time period, whether, you know, he's got so many different fields of talent, and that's how the Torah is presenting Avram. Now, the most important trait of Avram, of course, is an educator, because that's the one hint, or more than a hint, the Torah tells us why was Avraham chosen to lead his people, right? The world is corrupt. We said it didn't work. Adam in the first generation, destroyed by Noah. It didn't work again. He picks Avraham. But why Avraham? So I said, okay, his wife, this, we don't really know that much. We see later on good ideas, but when God says I'm going to by storm, I'm not going to conceal from Avram what I'm doing, he says, because I know that Avram is going to teach his children. And that's basically the SOS Torah is all about. This is chapter 19, verse 18, I believe. It says. I'm sorry, it's 18:19. The Torah tells us, I know that he will command his children, his household, they'll follow the way of God. The way of God is tzedek umishpat. That's the way of God. That's what Bereishit is all about. So that's why God is choosing Avraham, because he's going to teach his children Zaka Umishbat. Now, what's very interesting is the Torah doesn't just say he'll teach his children. At this point, the only child he has is Yishmael. So right now, he only has Yishmael. Yitzchak he's been told they're going to have a child, but they haven't had the Yitzchak yet. But he has Yishmael. I know he's going to teach them. But it also says, et kol bet beito acharav. Who's beito acharav? That's Eliezer, his servants. In other words, the non-Jews. Here you again see what I said at the beginning, that if the mission of the initial mission of mankind, God creating mankind, was for mankind to develop a relationship with God, all of mankind, not only Jews. This was a universal mission, and it didn't work, and God replaced that universal mission with Avram. It's not that he gave up on the universal mission. It's Avram's role. In other words, Avram is basically taking over the role of God, so to speak. In other words, our role in life is to imitate God, is to do God's work. God complete made an incomplete world. So Avram now is going to teach his children, quote-unquote, the Jewish people, the Chol B'nei Beito, and he's going to teach everybody else too. Even the people who aren't going to have a special covenant with God. I think that's an important point, that the pasuk says to children and the Kol Bnei Beito, this is Avram's mission. It's a sort of an Avhaman Koyim to influence the whole world. And that's why, of course, what does Avram do? Vayikra b'shem Hashem, right? Everywhere he goes, he calls out in God's name. Now, how successful is Abraham? I know that question wasn't phrased right. Ultimately, he becomes very successful. But I'm sorry. How many followers did Abraham have? Let me ask that question. How many people joined the Abraham Club, the club to where we service God, where we serve only one God? No, the one who philosophizes about God, as the Rambam describes, he's searching God. So Avram, he's teaching by Yikra B'Shem Hashem. He's going through the land up and down. He's teaching B'nai Beito. How many people do we know followed in his path? Is that a hard question?
Yitzchak,
good. And who else? Nobody, right? Nobody. So, I'm sure most people are familiar with the Midrash that Rashi quotes. When he went to Canaan, he took Hanepesh Asher Asu B'Charan. What does Hanepesh Asher Asu B'Charan mean? What's the Nepesh Asher Asu B'Charan? Anybody? So that's the famous Rashi. Avram Megayer HaAnashim, Besarah Megayer HaAnashim. Avram converted the men and Sarah converted the women. Hanepesh, the soul, they took all their souls that when they left Haran, they didn't just go to Egypt. God commands Avram. So he said, Avram's a great guy. He takes Sarah too, even though logically he shouldn't really take Sarah. I'm going to be a great nation. I'll get another wife. Who cares? He takes Sarah. He takes Lot. And he takes Hanepesh Asher Asu B'Charan. So Rashi quotes that he thinks all they had like an entourage, hundreds of people. Avram is Megayer at Hanashim and Sarah Megayer at Hanashim. What happened to all those people? Where did they all go?
Well, who fought with Avram in those wars? How did he get all those armies?
Right.
Weren't there some of the people?
I don't know. Avram was probably a pretty charismatic figure. I mean, Abimelech wants to make peace treaties with him. The fact that he goes to Egypt and Paro takes his wife, and then what, you think everybody who came to Egypt, they had the guards checking for Paro? I don't know. I it's an interesting question. The Torah doesn't really tell us, but I presume he was very wealthy. He came back from Egypt. Slaves, Hagar, according to many people, Hagar was the Egyptians. We know he was Keturah, Hagar, right? It was an Egyptian slave that they brought back with her. So I don't exactly know. The Torah doesn't tell us, but clearly the Torah gives no indication that anybody else outside of Yitzchak followed in the path of Avraham Avinu. It's a very beautiful midrash, but you'll notice, and this also, I remember how Nechama taught us this. Rashi then quotes another pshat. Rashi says, what is nefesh yeshur shubacharan? So it's magayer nashim upshuto shel mikra. That's a medrash. Upshuto shel mikra avadim ushvachot shekanu lahem. They took servants with them. Now, we know the basic rule. Rashi only quotes two comments if he's not happy with either comment. And the Nechama taught this. There's no evidence that they converted anybody. We don't know them. We never hear of them. So that explanation isn't solid enough for him. So he has to have a second explanation that it was really their money. What could very well be is that, you know, immigration is really hard. You think immigration is hard nowadays. Imagine in the ancient world, you know, even 100 years ago, people left Europe. They never would see their parents again. They went on a boat in America 120 years ago. That was it. They were leaving their family. They were never going to speak to them again the rest of their life. That immigration was really, really hard. And we know what religious life was when it's not true that everybody threw their tefillin off on the boat. They stopped wearing tefillin when they came to America, and you couldn't get a job if you didn't work on Shabbos. It's very, very hard. So it could be in his homeland, in Ur Kasdim, in Haran, they had a lot of people who followed them. But once they came to Canaan, that was a tough life. What's the first thing that happens when they come to Canaan? There's famine. It's hard. So you know what? The people, they were, you know, went with Avram, but it was not too easy. And they, one by one, they left. They left, but there is no evidence that Avraham had a major influence. And, Yitzchak, and Yitzchak also only has one follower, Yaakov. And Yaakov becomes Bnei Israel because all his children stay within the fold. We didn't know that. There was a time we thought they may not all stay in the fold. That's what we've explained before. That's probably the fight between Yosef and his brothers. Yosef thought the same way. In other words, in every generation, there's one person who's chosen. So Yosef thought it was him. The brothers thought, no, that then they went to war with him. And then at the end, it was everybody. And that's how we become Nasir. Because if you have one in every generation, eventually you'll die out. You have to grow at some point. But it didn't grow during the time of Abraham. It didn't grow during the time of Yitzchak. And he had 8 kids. And only one of them followed in his ways. He marries Keturah and he has 6 more kids, Medan, Midian. You don't hear from them. And but I think that's really is part of the point of the Chumash. It doesn't matter. In other words, we do what we do. In other words, we're judged on our efforts, not on our results. Our avot had great difficulty with their kids. We have difficulty with our kids too, people. So we can take solace. We can do the best that we can do. But it's not that Avram, we don't measure what the Torah is telling us. We don't measure a person's success by their results. Because there's so many factors that are beyond our control. Of course, we live in a bottom line society. We only measure results. And of course, we want good results. And that's a good thing, but it's not a fair way to measure necessarily because there's so many other factors. And that's, I think, a very important point the Torah wants to teach us here, that Avram really, he was a little bit odd by Yikra B'Shem Hashem. He's, you know, philosophizing about God. Everybody's doing their own thing. And he's, it's not such an attractive way of life, perhaps. So I don't know that Avram was so successful. Okay, I want to point out a couple more things. I said before, I spoke on Terach a little bit, that Terach went to Canaan, started being the first Zionist. So both Terach and Lemach, in other words, Avram owes part of the credit of who he became to his parents. In other words, we think that there is a complete break. But basically, what does the Torah tell us in Parsha Noach? Terach went to Canaan, and what is God? And they stopped. We don't know why he went, and we don't know why he stopped. Presumably, there's something special about the land of Canaan that Terach intuited. That he knew this, there's a special land that there's God. Now, if you want to accept all the Midrashim that Terach was, had an idol store, etc., what does it mean? They're searching for God. Remember, the Rambam says idolatry was a mistake. It wasn't evil. They had good intentions. They want to search God. So Terach is looking for God and he's going to go find him in Canaan. He doesn't quite find him. He has to stop, and God comes along and says, you finished the mission your father began. But Avram is really continuing in the path of his father, and the same thing with Lemach. So Lemach, it says, why does Lemach name his son Noach? Because this one will bring comfort from the curse of Adam. So you have to think about this. How many years is there between Adam and Noach? I told you beginning, Avram was born in 1948. He's the 20th generation. So like every 100 years, there's like another generation, more or less, right? And so Noach is born in the year 1056. If you add up from creation, 1056, and he lives for 950 years. That means he dies in the year 2006. Avram's born in 1948. That means Avram is 58 years old when Noach dies, and I often like to mention maybe they met each other, right? When Rashi had Noach lived in the same generation of Avram, they did live a little bit in the same generation. They lived, Noach, Avram is 58 years old. He's already recognized God by the time Noach dies. So, his father names him Noach, because he was the first person mentioned in the Torah to be born after Adam. Rishon, the land is cursed. That's what God says. I'm going to curse the land because of you, because of Adam, Adama, and what you did of eating from the fruit. I'm going to curse. And but once he dies, so Noah's father thinks that curse is over. So he names his son Noah. What does that mean? It means that Noah's father was thinking about this. In other words, they're 10 generations ago. It's 1,000 years ago. Who cares what happened 1,000 years ago? Some curse of God from 1,000 years ago. And yet Noah is, that's in his consciousness, and he's going to see hope in his son in this future. And I find it, I don't know, to me, I find that, I think that's, you know, means he wants to repair the sin of Adam. Noah's father is also a good guy. Noah didn't just come to it totally on his own. And I also find it interesting that Lamech lived to be 777 years. And we know that seven, Rabbi Liebtag now was starting a whole class, a whole series on the number seven. We know that seven is a very important number. So 777 years, Lamech, I think the Torah is telling us something, the same way that he was a special person. And therefore he had a son who was a special person. Terach, a seeker of God. Maybe his, the way he sought was incorrect. But he saw God, and then Avram is building on the legacy. And that's really what's the Torah telling us. That's the first of 11 chapters. Noah, Avram is building on the legacy of 20 generations. He's taking the good from that time and he's building it. And then he's trying to teach them, to teach the rest of the world, to do tzedakah u'mishpat. But he's not just totally ignoring the world that came, before him. Now, okay. So that's, a little bit about Avram Avinu. You know, his mission in the world, and you know, his task. Now, this does, of course, not this does not mean that Avram was you know perfect. There's two famous Rambans, or one famous Ramban, maybe two, I don't know, we'll see. When there was famine in Egypt, so Avram comes to the land of Israel, there's famine, and the first thing he does, he goes to Egypt. Was that good or bad? Anybody? Let's take a vote. Who thinks it was the right thing to do to go to Egypt? Who thinks it was the wrong thing to do?
He had no choice. He didn't want to starve.
He didn't want to starve, right? So that's what I would say. He did the right thing. Ain't some female an ace. We don't rely on miracles. And of course, Avraham Avinu should go to Egypt. The Ramban has a very sharp critique of Avram. It's like it's so sharp, you like it makes your hair stand on edge. The Ramban says that Avram Avinu chet gadol bishkaga. He sinned a great sin inadvertently, and then that was one sin, and then he did an avon sher chata. He did a chet and an avon. We know, like on Yom Kippur, chatati aviti pashati. A chet is the least is the, you know, accidental. That's what he says, bishkaka. Avon already is on purpose. And the Ramban says that Avraham Avinu sinned two terrible sins here. A, he went to Egypt. He should have had faith in God. God just told him, I'm going to make you a great nation. If God tells you a promise, I'm going to make you a great nation. Go to this land, you'll be a great nation. And a week later, he leaves the land because it's a little hard. Where's his faith in God? That's the Ramban's approach. And secondly, the fact that he lied about Sarah and he endangered his life. That's bad enough. Then the Ramban adds the kicker and he says, you know what the result, you know what Avram's like punishment for this sin was? Anybody want to guess what his punishment was? The Ramban?
His descendants should be enslaved in Egypt.
His descendants are going to be enslaved in Egypt. We were slaves in Egypt because Avram messed up 400 years earlier. It's like an unbelievable Ramban. It's like, whoa. Now, not everybody agrees with him, but like I say, the Torah is purposely ambiguous. The Torah doesn't let us know, but the Ramban takes a very harsh view on this. Now, and then he has said later on when Hagar gets, you know, pregnant, Sarah, in a tremendous act of self-sacrifice, Sarah tells Avram, why don't you marry my maidservant? You have to think about what that means, what Sarah's doing, right? Avram, we discussed, he wouldn't do that. He's with Sarah. He's taking her with her. I'll be a great nation. I don't care that she's barren. She's my wife. And then Sarah says, listen, it's not going to work. You've got to have kids. God wants to make you a great nation. Take my maidservant, Hagar. It's like an unbelievable act of self-sacrifice. But the Ramban is basically saying, you know, sometimes you got to know where you, what level you can be on. It's, you can't try superhuman action unless you're superhuman. You can't go beyond yourself. And what Sarah did was it was too much. It was beyond what a reasonable human being can be expected. And therefore, once Hagar actually gets pregnant, so Sarah wants to throw it. Yeah, Hagar was making fun of her, whatever. The Torah is unclear, but Takel, she became light, whatever that means. But the bottom line is Sarah throws her out. And the Ramban said that was a terrible sin. That was a terrible sin that Sarah did. And it was terrible that Avram let her do it. That was the first sin of Avram was an active sin. He went to Egypt. He lied about his wife. The second sin of Avram is a passive sin. That's generally considered sort of less terrible. You're not actively doing something, but of course, passive sins are also sins. So the fact that he allows Sarah to throw her out. So that's the Ramban is quite critical of Avram. Now, that, of course, doesn't take away one iota from his greatness. That's this is the whole debate. How do we view our avod and imahot? But the view of the Ramban, and it's based on Midrashim, and many people, I mean, we'll read in upcoming weeks what the Netziv says. The Netziv says that, you know, Yitzchak and Rivka had a terrible marriage, basically. It was the wrong wife. It was Livni Li Yitzchak. In other words, Avram gave instructions to his servant to find a wife, Livni Li Yitzchak. Two conditions. It's got to be someone who's worthy to be my daughter-in-law, somebody who can marry my son, who's going to carry on the way of the Jewish people. That's Livni. But it's also got to be somebody, Li Yitzchak. It's got to be somebody, Yitzchak is such a, you know, he lived a very sheltered life, very different life from Avram. He doesn't see evil. He's a very different life. He needs a special personality. And so they were very successful in finding a wife, Livni. This is how the Netziv writes, but they weren't successful in finding a wife, Li Yitzchak. She comes from a totally rough and tumble world. Their personalities are so different. It's an amazing comment, but it's a beautiful comment in many ways. And this is how many of the Farshim say that doesn't take away from the greatness of Avram. That he, when the Western Ram says, he did it inadvertently. It was a mistake. Yes, okay. And then once he made that mistake, then it followed that he's going to have to lie about who Sarah was. And one mistake led to a second sin. And the Torah is portraying our avod and imahot as human beings, as great, great human beings. So I just want to sort of put this all together, summarize. I know we sort of were in a few different places, but basically, what do we have with Avram Avinu? Avram Avinu, and the Torah enters into a new phase. It's the phase that, of course, we're all interested in, the development of the Jewish people. But the Torah begins with the development of the human race. And first you have the human race, and that's what Rav Soloveitchik said, for example, that in Ma'arat HaMachpelah, you have Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah, but you also have Adam and Chava, the Midrash says, Kiryat Arba, the four couples who are buried there, because Avram and Sarah have to be part of Adam and Chava. We have to build on the human race. And Avram's mission is basically what God entrusted Avraham to take over what God's initial mission was. When God created Adam and he's going to have a relationship with him, now he wants Avraham to be the one who's going to help the human race develop that relationship with God. And that's a long, long process that is still ongoing. And therefore, Avram has to have many, many roles. He's got to be able, he has to now know how to negotiate, both internally, how to get along well within the Jewish people, fighting with Lot, not fighting with Lot. He has to know how to make peace treaties with Abimelech. He has to know how to argue with God, when to argue with God. He has to know when to go to war, when to make peace, when to make money, when to negotiate, when to press, when to teach. So that's Avram. Avram is the most multifaceted of all the avot. You contrast him to Yitzchak. It's like a different world. The worldliness of Avram compared to what we have in Yitzchak. But it's a very difficult mission. Avram Avinu, it's a very difficult. He had to cut himself off from this past. And that is no easy task. But Avraham Avinu, he laid the foundation for future, you know, to build on it. And that's, you know, he's it's Elohei Avraham. That's you know, Avraham, it's our founding father, so to speak. So that the Torah, you know, presents these stories, and this story has to be understood anew in every generation. We have to look at it and figure out how we can apply it to us. And that's really our goal. The Gemara says that everybody's supposed to say, when will my actions be as great as Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov? When will I reach the level of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And and I think it's because of that the Torah presents their failures. You're going to think, Avraham, how can I be like Avraham? Are they crazy? They're so much greater. But if Chazal have this, I think it's such a empowering idea that a person's always say, when can I reach? So of course, the idea is, when can I reach? I never quite reaching it, but it's not otherworldly. It's within our grasp, and therefore they're presented in all their human foibles and all their humanity and issues. Okay, that's it's getting a little late. Let me see if there are any questions. Quickly, just let me see here. Possible Terach was leaving an ancestral home to create a dynasty in a new place. Yeah. By the way, Terach, we don't know who Avram's mother is. I find that quite fascinating. That we're talking about the role of woman. You know, we don't know who Noach's wife is. We don't know who all the wives is. Only by Avram. We don't even know who Terach's wife is. Terach was a little different, but Terach is still part of that old world, and we have no idea who Terach's wife is. So I don't know where Terach is moving. The Torah doesn't tell us. That's the beauty. So you can. I don't know why. I suggested because Terach intuited that there was something special about the land of Israel. And Terach was a person who sought God. He may have sought God and worshiped by idols at the same time. That's not a contradiction. That's how we sought God. And the Torah comes along and say, no. Don't worship God by sacrificing your children. Don't do it by worshiping idols. We have a special way to worship God. Later on, the Torah is going to come and say, don't offer sacrifices wherever you want. Only offer sacrifices in the temple in Jerusalem. So that's a common reframe of the Torah, taking something that the nations of the world are doing. They're saying, no, that's not right. Their intent is right, but the concept of sacrifice, that's a universal concept. The Torah says, we want you to do it slightly differently. Okay, you want to know why Sarah never heard about, somebody asked me why Sarah never heard about the Akedah till later. Yeah, that was also the Lech Lecha, the same way the Lech Lecha to go to Canaan is only to Avraham, and it's Avraham who takes Sarah. The Lech Lecha to go to the Akedah, yeah, it's very good, important point. Lech Lecha to go to the Akedah is also only given to Avraham. But here, Avraham, of course, like chooses not to tell Sarah. I mean, it's obvious. Like if you tell Sarah, I'm going to go kill Yitzchak, Sarah would have killed Avraham. I mean, you know, either literally or who knows what, which is what you would expect. In other words, that so Avraham didn't tell Sarah what he was doing. Whether or not, you know, the Rashi claims Sarah died after hearing about the Akedah. She was, you know, Yitzchak was 37, died. That's not the simple reading. The simple reading is Yitzchak was younger. He wasn't an infant because he was talking to Avraham, but he probably wasn't 37 years old either. And probably Sarah lived after Yitzchak. But you're right, she's not involved. And because God wouldn't put Sarah through the Akedah. I mean, that's all I could say. I don't know. But I would think Avraham, I don't want to say Sarah would fail the test of the Akedah. I want to quite phrase it like that. But I think God wouldn't want to put Sarah to that. It would be too harsh. But Avraham Avinu came from a world where he understood that you have to do that. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe you have another idea if anybody would like to suggest. Amalia Watson, we know from Hammurabi's God that taking a second wife is not unusual. Of course, we know from the whole Torah. First wife has a son, the child would be the inheritor. Right, but Ephraim refused to take a second wife. Okay. I'm not sure, Barry, what you mean by the summary comparison of Avraham and Jacob. If you want to clarify that, right? The Gemara does give Avraham's mother's name. I don't remember. Ilana, why don't you want to tell me what it is? Who's the Gemara says Noah's wife's name was Naama. Lemach, by Lemach, there Noam at Adan Sila, whatever, and then there you had the child, their daughter was Naama. So Naama, beauty, present. So why she listed? So the Midrash says Nama makes sense. Nama was Noah's wife. And that's, of course, the two lines, the line of Cain and the line of Shet, that are described in the end, Rashi joined together. But that's a midrash. The Torah never tells us what Noah's wife's name. I have no idea. Okay, I have to look that up. Thank you very much. Baba Batcha Tzadik Aleph. But that's more by Boaz there. Okay. Also, what Haman's mother and Noah and Avram's mother are the same person. Is that what it says in the Medrash? If it does, it for sure doesn't mean it literally. Maybe Avram totally nullified himself to God's will. He didn't want to kill Yitzchak. That's the question. We don't know what Avram was thinking on his way to the Akedah. This ought to be beautiful. He had 3 days, right? Vayash came Avram, but Boker's reason Magdimim Lemitzvot. Avram got up early in the morning. Now, what's amazing is how did he sleep at night? God tells him to sacrifice his son, and he goes to bed, right? Because what does it say? I mean, it doesn't say he goes to bed, but it says in the Torah. It's a long parsha. Okay. Vayashkem Avraham Bavokar, Vayachbosh et Chamro. He woke up in the morning, and he saddled his own donkey. This was also a Nechama thing we learned. Why does the Torah tell us he saddled his own donkey? So the Ibn Ezra says he had a service. It doesn't mean he literally saddled his own donkey. It means he got up in the morning and they got his car ready. He told the servant, go get the car, go get the donkey. But it doesn't mean he did it. And Nechama found that comment so unsettling. She found it so sad. She said, the Torah doesn't have to tell us that he told his servant to get the donkey. He did it. As Rashi quote, Ahava Mikal Kalat Ashura. Love is blind. Love is, we don't think straight when we're so intensely involved in something. So he was so into doing God's will. He got up early in the morning. He saddled his own donkey. And just the Rashi quotes by Bilam. By Akam Bilam, he did the same thing. By Achoshadatono, so Sinam Mikalkalat Ashura, hatred. When a person hates, they don't think straight. When a person loves, they don't think straight. Because if you think straight, you don't kill your kid, right? But Avram was so full of love of God, he was willing to kill his kid, and that the Torah comes along and say, we don't want that. Not only shouldn't you kill your kid, you shouldn't harm your kid. But the fact that Avram can sleep at night, I always find that unbelievable. How in the world could Avram go to sleep? By Yashkem Aboker, God tells him to kill his son. So what does that mean? Was he at peace with it? We don't know. That's the beauty of the Torah. And I think throughout history, different generations will understand it. That's the beauty of the Torah. Every generation can understand it differently. It's the same reason I started, but I never really developed the idea. We only hear about Avram when he's 75 years old, right? We got married sometime before, but we don't know anything about him. Why does the Torah tell us nothing about how he found God? Because if the Torah tells us how Avram found God, you know what happened? Everybody would want to copy Avram. And it would probably be inappropriate because everybody has to find God in their own way. So the Torah doesn't tell us. Torah tells us nothing. Who cares how he found God? Everybody finds God in their own way. Now, it tells us about Moshe a little bit because the Moshe going out, their brothers hitting the Egyptian, because those are important for the development of who Moshe was. But even there, we know very little about his upbringing. But the Torah purposely doesn't tell us how the founder of our faith came to found God. So the Rambam has his ideas and Midrashim. Everybody has his ideas. Very nice. The Midrashim are not explaining historically what happened. They're talking for their generation. What can we learn? How should we discover God? So the Torah tells us nothing. When God told them to sacrifice his son, did he accept it? God, well, we know he didn't argue. That was the question we discussed earlier, because maybe he thought it was okay, or he was so torn. He was so hurt, he didn't know what to do, but he had 3 long days to think about it. We don't know. The Midrash, you know, that's where Tashlich comes from. The Midrash says that the Satan put water to stop him from going until it went to his neck, and he was going to go all the way through, and they tried to stop him. But we don't know what Ephraim was thinking, and that's I think that's makes the story much more powerful, and it makes it to interpret in many ways. And I know what Ruchama was saying, I don't know if she's still on, was saying earlier about, you know, God didn't tell the sacrifice. Did Avraham misunderstand God's commands? And that's we don't have time to discuss that question. It's an important question. It's sort of a modern question. I alluded to it when one of the Pirkei Avot classes a few number of weeks ago, but we'll have to leave that for another time. Okay. Any other comments or questions? Critique, always willing to hear. And Otherwise, okay, I'm back to back. This was sort of an unexpected, shear and extra shear I was giving. But please God, tomorrow we'll have our regular shear on the Siddur at 9:30. And we're in Birchat HaShachar. That's where sort of we got up to, and that's where into week three. So those who can join, I think it's, like I said, the first week, I want to thank people because it's been, I've learned, so much in preparing for the Shiur on the Siddur, because it's something we don't study often enough. Okay. And then mentioned next week, we'll be starting two new series Monday at 11 on translation of the Bible throughout history. And then on Wednesday on how the Tanakh was put together and all the regulations. Okay, want to wish everybody Laila Tov and all the best, and hope to learn with you soon, and invite one friend to come and join us, please.